You gonna bring up chairs for you guys, or? Yeah. All right, while they're getting the chair set up, I've got maybe just to kick off one question for Derek and one question for Jim. For Derek, I know Alan has been talking for a while about commonizing parts, and you mentioned it this morning. Maybe you can give us a couple of concrete examples of specific components that you've commonized. Give us a feel for how far along in this process you are, maybe an idea of in dollar terms, how much you're saving and what the opportunity is for commonization. And then for Jim, can you talk a little bit about mercury? It was sort of noticeably absent in a lot of the product plan discussion. Where does it fit in the portfolio? And can you give me an argument for why you want to keep Mercury brand alive?
Okay. Well, let me start with your question, Chris, around commonality and some demonstration of some of the impact. I showed you the pyramid that had components and then vehicles. A couple of examples on a component level, consistent with the thought process of single leadership within Ford of a component or a subsystem. That also ties to our fuel economy strategy. I mentioned that we're moving very quickly to electric power steering across our fleet. In North America, about 90% of our fleet over the next 3 years will move to electric power steering. And what we did there was put in place a team, a global team, that developed both the technology strategy and the supplier strategy. So it is one technology strategy for Ford, one supplier strategy for Ford that works with two supplier partners, and those electric power steering systems then are used globally across all our vehicles. So I think it's pretty clear that when you take that approach, the power of scale becomes very evident. Another example that I would point to is seat structure. Just within North America alone, we have, at least last year, 28 different seat structure designs. Over the business plan period, we have insourced the design of our seat structures so we can drive the commonality, and we reduce that complexity to two. And I think, frankly, you could do the math yourself in terms of our volume and 28 and 2 and see the power of scale and the power of commonality. So that's two examples at the commodity level. At the vehicle level, let me just talk about B-Car as an example. When you look at B-Car from a platform perspective, we will have one platform that serves our portfolio of B-cars worldwide. And obviously that portfolio would include three-door, four-door, five-door hatchbacks and sedans and potentially other vehicle top hats. That platform scale for the Ford brand is somewhere over 1 million units, given that's one of the largest segments in the world. And that platform, we have the ability and the demonstrated ability through the C1 platform, which was the basis of Focus, Mazda 3, the Volvo S40, V50, through the EUCD platform, which was the basis of Mondeo, S-Max, and Galaxy, of knowing how to propagate a platform from a bandwidth perspective across a wide range of top hats. So that's what drives that over 1 million units and drives it across all regions globally, the Americas, Europe, as well as Asia Pacific. And then you can take individual top hats, as I mentioned, the four-door sedan. And that four-door sedan, from a design perspective, outside of a different fascia, so that we have the Ford North America front face of Ford. In China, the front face of Ford is the same as in Europe. But outside of that and some tunables, the design of the parts are the same. So you now have the scale of that four-door sedan across Asia Pacific, Eastern Europe, and North America. So that's an example from a vehicle perspective.
Just two things on the B car. How many B car platforms do you have right now, and when does the new single B car hit the road?
Chris, I'm not sure I can actually remember the number of B car platforms we have today, but it's more than one, and it's certainly more than three. The launch of the B cars that we've talked about will occur between 08 and 2010. Progressively across Europe, Asia Pacific, and the Americas.
Okay. For Mercury, the majority of the Lincoln Mercury volume is still Mercury, and the key drivers to that volume is Mariner Milan. Those are very new vehicles still, so there's been quite a bit of investment in Mercury from the company standpoint. In addition, later this year, we're going to invest even more in the Milan product and add a hybrid, so we continue and invest in Mercury. And if you talk to the Mercury customers, most of them are very loyal to the brand. They understand that that the product range is very different than Lincoln, and as we further differentiate Lincoln with exclusive models like the MKS, that difference will become even clearer and more compelling to the customer.
Front here.
Thank you. John Murphy from Merrill Lynch. When we look at the average age and replacement rate slides that you showed, you show some pretty impressive improvement over the next 3 years and getting to industry averages. If we fast forward the clock a year from now, might you be ahead of those industry averages? And also, as we juxtapose that against your assumption or target of maintaining market share over the next 3 years, it seems like you're trailing the industry on those two metrics. I'm just trying to understand how you maintain market share when you're trailing on those two key metrics. Is there a marketing effort that can support market share here in the short term?
Well, let me answer the first part of the question. In terms of the slope of improvement, it was very clear and clear to you and clear to us that in terms of average age of our portfolio in 06, we were very uncompetitive. What you saw in the graph was a very steep slope that by 09, both for Ford and Lincoln, the number is in a very, very competitive range, and then it's held throughout the plan period in that competitive range. So it's a steep drop between 07, 08, and 09 for both brands, Ford and Lincoln.
From a marketing standpoint, the real opportunity for us is the second half of 08 accelerating into 09. If you look at our refreshment of the product, as Derek said, from a marketing standpoint, those launches all happen in the third and fourth quarter and really carry in and have full impact in 09 from a business standpoint. So really the issues we face in the first 6 months are more of the current portfolio, and then starting with Flex, we really accelerate the product launch. That's the same refresh rate or better than industry best, much better than average. And from a marketing standpoint, that really gives us a lot of opportunity with the F-Series, Flex, MKS, and also the hybrids.
Rod Lash from Deutsche Bank. Derek, one of the challenges that Ford has had in the past has been the cost, the content cost of the new vehicles that have been introduced. That certainly was the case with the last generation F-150. And it seems with all the regulatory pressures, safety, and all the fuel economy, it seems like there's going to be content creep over the next couple of years. So can you just give us some thoughts on the cost of these new vehicles as they are introduced? Are these initiatives that you're discussing enough to overwhelm the content creep, or do you still see the cost just because of regulatory factors or content overwhelming that? And specifically on the F-150, what is that going to look like?
Just waiting for the people mover. Yeah, Rod. In terms of the cost, you're right that there is incremental content, particularly features being added to the vehicle and increased capability. But at the same time, we've had a very big focus on offsetting cost reduction. Some of the elements of that offsetting cost reduction in terms of processes is what we call team value management, working with the supply base, with a real focus on value stream, understanding when we're starting from the raw material to the part coming to our assembly plant, can we make that value stream more efficient by working together with our supply base partners? Benchmarking of our design efficiency is another important element. And clearly, a lot of the discussion we've had around simplification, whether it's simplification from a platform perspective, simplification at the commodity level that drives commonality across the total F-series under and over 8500 and across vehicles, also drives scale and improves cost. And we do that through teams that are, in essence, dedicated. So we've had very significant cost reduction targets that are working since 06, and we've learned from the European experience. The total value, team value management process is something that we brought from Europe to North America as a way to drive cost reduction in a rigorous manner and in conjunction with our supply-based partners in a very metric-driven manner. So what we've tried to do is offset any content with substantial cost reduction. I mean, clearly, as part of driving top-line revenue, you are looking for mix increases. And the Platinum series that we've added to the F-series is a perfect example of that, where we're testing how far you can actually take a luxury truck. But on the workhorse level, it's a different story, where you're trying to maintain the cost level in spite of the added feature content by having offsetting cost reductions.
Are the costs up, down, neutral, net of all those the initiatives to reduce costs versus the content creep, raw materials, emissions, things like that?
I think relative to content or the features are adjusted, the cost is relatively close, outgoing to an incoming model.
Alexis Renault from WestLB Malone Asset Management. A quick question on the number of platforms you had in 2006. What is the number and how many platforms will you have in 2009? Because there was no figure on your graph.
The reason that we didn't put absolute numbers is because various people count platforms different ways. There are some people who count the front end of a vehicle as a platform. In our case, we basically count the rolling chassis that supports a full segment as a platform, and then look at modules that can support that segment. So we're able to try to do the analysis competitively, so we have an apples-to-apples comparison. So what we try to indicate in our numbers so that people don't get confused in just different ways in terms of how they count platforms, that we clearly have a larger number of platforms in the 06 and 07 timeframe than best of competition, counting apples to apples, which is for us full rolling chassis. By the time you get to 012, based on our best competitive information and an apples to apples count, we believe that our platform complexity will be approximately equal to the best of competition.
But can you put a figure, or is it secret, a figure?
It's not a question of being secret, it's just simply a question of it's talking about an apples to apples range and just the way we count. So what I'm indicating to you is the way we count, which is a full rolling chassis. Our number in the 012 timeframe and our platform leverage, volume of vehicles per platform, is by our count equal to the best of competition. I'm not trying to be coy, I'm just trying to avoid numbers that everyone counts because they count in different ways.
Brian Johnson, Lehman Brothers. Question for Jim. Mike Jackson was on CNBC this morning talking about some challenges to consumer credit, at least in his portfolio businesses, which obviously include your brand and your former brand. What are you hearing from your dealers about credit availability, and how do you expect that to develop through 2008?
Well, the manifestation of those challenges seem to be that people can get credit, but the rates are a lot higher because there's a lot more risk, and the dealers are getting a lot more. The F&I process is getting a lot more complicated. How it manifests itself, I think, for the manufacturers are more variable marketing exposure potentially. But at the same time, we're seeing certain vehicles where we're not seeing as many challenges. But if you look at the dealer's point of view, financing still is not an issue in terms of whether they can get someone financed. It's more a question of what rate they wind up getting.
So does that mean someone who is maybe 8% winds up walking out with 20%? Or 16%, and does that push them into the used car market?
No, I don't think. Well, dealers I talk to, they're focused on used cars for other reasons, but customers are not getting to used cars because of the pressure. But the lift that seems much higher than what I hear from dealers. But there's no doubt that customers are seeing much higher rates. You know, obviously we'll see what happens with the Fed and continued interest rates in the U.S., but no doubt about it, customers are seeing more pressure on the payment side.
And final question, when you talk about product categories, where do pickups fit into that? Are there customers? Are the pickup customers more credit challenged than the car buyers due to the state of the construction business? Got the zoom zoom going.
Someone's having lots of fun.
Yeah. Certainly, it depends on which segment of the full size truck business. You know, there's probably only 25% that are real kind of commuter personal duty, pure personal duty. But there's no doubt about it. There's a lot more pressure on full size truck customers than there ever has been. But they also have a lot more offer. What we saw last year is that the new products got a lot of traction. And certainly with the new F-150, we feel that there's quite a very compelling reason to come into a Ford dealership and look at our trucks in the fourth quarter of this year. But there's no doubt we're seeing a lot more challenging customer profiles in the full-size truck market. That's one of the reasons why we're decentralizing our marketing. Because, for example, in Texas, the pickup truck market is very robust. It's doing very well. And actually in Texas as a whole, Ford grew last year because of the strengths in a lot of our truck and SUV products. So by decentralizing the marketing, we can really focus on those parts of the region where the economic situation and the consumers still have purchasing power. There are other parts of the country where it's a lot more challenging based on their economic situation. So one size definitely does not fit all in the full-size truck market, and it's really the flexibility of your marketing that's going to dictate the kind of market share you get this year.
Hi, Jonathan Steinmetz, Morgan Stanley. A couple of questions, first for Jim and then for Derek. Jim, you talked about inventory targets on the pickup. I believe you said 70 to 80 days on forward supply. Can you talk about similar levels on cars, on crossovers, on SUVs? And if you could just clarify, is that a retail number or does that include fleet?
That's a retail dealer day supply target. And because we're really looking at our business retail or retail now. It's a key metric for us. The CUVs, our target is about 10 days supply less than pickup truck. Frankly, it's been much lower than that because of the popularity of our CUVs, especially Escape and Edge. Both of those production facilities are maxed out, and we just can't really drive the day supply down, but we have them in kind of the sweet spot right now. And on the car side, about the same 60 to 70 day supply range.
If you could just compare, how were things being managed previously? I mean, what is the change that's represented here? The number or in terms of methodology of how you go about it?
Well, I think way before I got to Ford Motor Company, throughout all of 07 and even 06, there was a very disciplined approach to 4-day supply. We're just now communicating, you know, the details of how we do that. But it was a very consistent strategy throughout 07. You can see it in the dealer profitability. You can see it in our variable marketing expense compared to our relative to previous years in 05 and beyond. And it's been going on for a long time now.
Okay, and then quickly for Derek, you talked about some engineering changes. You guys spent about $8 billion in 05 on engineering and R&D combined. You spent a little over $7 in 06. I guess the 07 number's not out. But when you think about all the R&D that's forthcoming, will these changes allow you to actually reduce that number, or is that going to just curtail the growth in that line item?
Could you just raise your hand so I can see who was talking?
Oh, there you go.
I'm sorry. I kept looking over here. Thanks. Okay, thank you. Our intention is to reduce the number on an absolute basis, and the plan that I showed you actually accomplishes that.
Over here on the left. Hey, Manchu. On your left, Derek.
Okay, thanks.
One question for Derek and one for Jim. I guess first for Jim, you mentioned the marketing budget was going to become a lot more regional now. I'm just wondering, do you have any color on how other car makers do this? For example, particularly at your prior employer, was that the norm to do it at a regional level?
I would say the level of regionality is similar to Toyota's. Very different, though, I think, than other car companies. However, that being said, the ability to execute very regional strategy, especially in the fixed side, the dealer ad groups in Tier 3. At Ford, I think there's quite a bit, even more ability to be precise on which vehicles you focus on, because the product lineup is pretty specific nowadays. You see most of the FDAFs focusing on Edge, Fusion, F-Series, Focus, so they can be a lot more specific on their media focus on specific vehicles than, let's say, Toyota, which has very wide range. So the execution is actually a little bit even, you can get more traction here at Ford than I would say at Toyota, but the level of variable and how we treat that, I'd say it's similar.
Okay, and then for Derek, is the level of commonization at Volvo, in your view, too deep now to ever potentially separate that brand?
I think it's, in terms of what we said about Volvo, is that what we're trying to do is find absolutely the right balance between commonization that, frankly, we've already developed pretty substantially, and working between the Ford brand and the Volvo brand in Europe. Maintaining that commonization where it doesn't impact the brand value, and then moving Volvo more upscale from a premium perspective. So the challenge that we're going to be working on as we move forward is maximizing the product development and part synergies that we already have where it doesn't impact the brand value, and then taking Volvo to a higher level of premiumness. And that's actually the work that's going on as we speak.
My question, though, is are you precluded from ever potentially selling Volvo given the level of commonization that exists right now or what you're planning?
Right now, the effort is around improving Volvo, and that is the focus. And as we've indicated, it's improving in terms of its premiumness while still maximizing the synergies with the remainder of Ford, particularly from a product development and a purchasing perspective.
Back here on the right.
Mark Warnsman, Calian. The Flex offers a unique design proposition to customers. I'm here.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
And Jim, you mentioned the potential for the Flex to conquest new customers for Ford. I wonder if you could discuss the target customer for the Flex. What kind, and as part of that, what kind of cars do you or minivans or SUVs do you anticipate those customers will be trading in when they walk into a showroom to buy a Flex?
The number one second choice vehicle, if we do it right, will be no second choice. And we've seen that in a lot of vehicles like XP and other vehicles that bring a kind of design leadership. I think it will change over time, but the number two and three trade-in vehicles, or number one and two, are, we feel, will be traditional full-size SUVs and traditional SUV. Similar trend we've seen on Edge. The most meaningful for us is the distribution geographically of those customers that we sell Flex. We feel there's a tremendous opportunity to conquest vehicle, conquest customers in the Sun Belt, which is something we've seen with Edge. On Edge, it was interesting, if you look at the numbers, we sold 130,000, thought it'd be about 100,000, but the conquest ability of that vehicle really grew throughout 07, and so did the sales. It accelerated through the whole year, almost 20% segment share. But what was most encouraging to us is the strength of Edge in Florida, California, Arizona, and Texas. Those are areas where we have a lot of opportunity to grow as a brand. And we feel that Flex has the same opportunity, not only with new customers, we think the majority will be new to the brand, but in addition, geographically, they'll be from very different parts of the U.S.
Is it just Ford's historical weakness in the Sun Belt that provides that opportunity for growth, or is there something specific about the design proposition in the Edge and the Flex that make it that much more attractive in the Sun Belt states?
It seems from the customer research that both are playing. You have consumers in those parts of the market throughout the U.S. to see Flex as something very new. It researched in clinic very, very strong proportionally in those areas. In addition, we have so much more natural traffic in those dealerships for that kind of vehicle than we do for, let's say, passenger cars.
Okay, we've got time for one more question.
Yeah.
Here in the middle?
I think, yep. Hi, it's good morning. It's Robert Barry from Goldman Sachs. Two questions. One on incentives. There were some comments out of GM in the last couple of days that suggested the industry would do whatever it needs to on incentives to keep the SAR at or above 16 million as we head into this downturn. Does Ford agree with that? And then second question is on gas turbos. I think in the context of the EcoBoost discussion, you were mentioning more use of gas turbos. Can you just remind us what your use is now and what the outlook is for the use of gas turbos going forward? Thanks.
I'll take, you take incentives. Okay, I'll start with the second question then. In terms of gas turbos, I just again want to clarify that it's gasoline direct injection turbo plus downsizing, and it's really that latter element that is unique from a Ford strategy perspective. And the other element is affordability, because what we're really trying to do here is bring that technology to market quickly and then across a broad range of our portfolio. So within 5 years we will have that engine technology on 500,000 units of the Ford portfolio per year in North America alone. And the reason we're so strong in that technology is, again, around affordability versus other alternatives to improve fuel economy, like clean diesel and hybrids, and the fact that we can deliver it then in high volume, so it has maximum impact for our customers who are all demanding high fuel economy, and also maximum impact on the environment in terms of reducing CO2. So that's our plan in terms of volume and substantial volume growth.
Regarding incentives, November and December were very interesting months for the industry, especially as we look at segments like traditional SUV, pickup truck, and even passenger cars. Going forward, we absolutely see opportunity for us because we're launching products. When you look at Focus, for example, our variable marketing has really reduced considerably with the new Focus. So it depends on the segment, depends on whether your products are new or not. In the full-size market at 50,000 feet, though, you know, we absolutely see the need to stay competitive. When you look at our, you know, when you look at the market dynamics, we can see some of the manufacturers that are taking a different approach than maybe Ford has in terms of, you know, day supply and inventory going forward. And that's going to put pressure as it did in December. December, for example, was full-size truck was actually relatively strong as percentage of the industry retail. And but there was a big acceleration by some manufacturers on variable marketing spend. In the case of Ford, we were very disciplined. Going forward, though, we will have to, you know, continue to be competitive as we lead up to the launch of the new F-150. And if that launch is similar to what we've seen on Focus and Edge and some of our newer products, we'll have quite a bit of opportunity on the variable side. But it, of course, it really comes down to your product strength and the ability to launch successfully.
Okay, thanks. I think we're going to have to cut it off there. We have maybe till about 9:30 at the latest to sort of mill around here and look at some of the Ford product before we have to head to Johnson Controls. The Ford folks are going to be breaking down the seats and the display, so try not to trip over people. But we do have a little bit of time to check out the product. Thank you both very much. We appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.